Baby formula makers face an FTC collusion probe. Plus, South Carolina tightens abortion restrictions as access erodes across the South. And when is a big bank too big? JP Morgan's continued growth sparks a debate.
That's sort of a category killer, right? There are still 5,000 banks in the U.S., but it means it's harder sometimes for the smaller banks to compete. And I think there's the argument that regulation should figure out how to support the smaller banks.
It's Wednesday, May 24th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. South Carolina has moved to ban most abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy. The bill was approved by the South Carolina Senate and is set to impose severe restrictions on abortion in one of the last bastions for legal access in the southern U.S. The state's Republican-led Congress has tried to find a compromise between a proposed total ban and current law, which allowed abortions up to 22 weeks. Republican Katrina Sheely is one of the five women in the 46-seat state Senate who opposed the six-week ban.
I don't think anybody wants to have a 22-week abortion law in South Carolina. I think a 12-week amendment was a good compromise, and that's what I said, and they didn't want to go with it.
Banning abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy, before most people know they're pregnant, sets up a legal battle in South Carolina, whose highest court earlier this year ruled that the state's constitution contains a right to abortion. We are exclusively reporting that makers of baby formula are facing fresh scrutiny from the U.S. Federal Trade Commission, which is investigating whether they colluded on bids for lucrative state contracts. The agency is probing whether Abbott Laboratories, Nestle, and Reckitt Benckiser coordinated on bids for the federally funded Women, Infants, and Children Program, or WIC, which gives free baby formula to low-income families. WSJ reporter Liz Esley-White says the FTC is looking to see whether such alleged collusion benefited company sales.
If a formula company gets the state WIC contract, that ends up giving it an advantage in the market overall. At least we've seen that in academic literature that, you know, you get a better store shelf placement usually. Sometimes you even get hospital or doctor recommendations just from being this really prominent brand in the state. And so the FTC has said it's looking into whether companies may have coordinated those contracts. Typically, they're giving huge discounts to the states, but then they're also reaping all these benefits in the market overall.
Abbott lawyers have said they aren't aware of any evidence suggesting even a hint of collusion or coordination, while Nestle and Reckitt Benckiser say they have responded to the FTC's request for further information on the matter. And struggling regional bank PacWest is selling its real estate lending arm, Civic Financial Services. WSJ Markets reporter Joe Wallace says that offloading of a unit that specialized in lending money to landlords and home flippers is PacWest's latest move to shore up confidence in its operations.
PacWest bought Civic a couple of years ago, but it's rethought its strategy this year. As part of the deal, Rock 360 won't be buying Civic's previously extended loans or loan servicing operations. Those will stay with PacWest. The buying company will take on Civic's data, intellectual property, brand, and workforce. The initial investor reaction appears to be positive. The stock is up in early pre-market trading, and if carried through to the close, those gains would build on a big advance in PacWest's stock price over the past couple of days.
And speaking of banks, the sheer size of JP Morgan provided stability during a crisis of confidence this spring, but for many, its show of strength actually exposed a weakness in the U.S. financial system. Our look at the continued growth and structural significance of America's largest bank is coming up after the break.
AI may be the most important new computer technology ever, but AI needs a lot of processing speed, and that gets expensive fast. Upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/Wall Street. Oracle.com/Wall Street.
Thousands of banks call the U.S. home, but none of them are as big and all-encompassing as J.P. Morgan Chase. And after J.P. Morgan stepped in to buy failed bank First Republic, it's becoming clear to many that J.P. Morgan isn't just a standalone in the sector, but is poised to get bigger and bigger. David Benoit is the Wall Street Journal's banking reporter in New York. And David, for my benefit, for the benefit of our listeners, could you just quantify J.P. Morgan's size?
Well, that takes multiple stats, probably. So let's start on the consumer side. It is now more than 12% of the country's deposits, which is well more than anyone else. It's the biggest investment bank. It makes more investment banking revenue, makes more trading revenue than any of its rivals like Goldman and Morgan Stanley. In banking in the U.S., J.P. Morgan is the biggest, really across the spectrum. It now has a branch in all 48 lower states, so minus Hawaii and Alaska, and it's the only one with that. It's really, in the last few years, just grown to an astronomical level.
And it's still growing.
It is definitely still growing. If you were to talk to people at J.P. Morgan, they would say, yeah, but look at all these things we're not number one in. Look where we can get bigger and better. And as we just saw in the spring banking chaos in the U.S., J.P. Morgan drew in $50 billion in deposits, which is like a top 15 bank. And it bought First Republic, a failed bank, in an auction for a cheap price, giving them another huge leg up. Huge footprint into cities like Boston, where they had only just started going. It gives them a presence in Silicon Valley with very rich tech founders who loved to bank at Silicon Valley and who J.P. Morgan has been desperate to get as a client. And most importantly, it gives them a big boost in their wealth management business, which is something that J.P. Morgan had been sort of lagging the rest of the industry. It wasn't a focus of them until a few years ago. They'd been slowly, painfully growing it organically, and now they just bought a pretty good wealth manager that really overlaps well with the customer they want.
So a big bank here and getting even bigger and leading to a debate about the pros and cons of J.P. Morgan's size. Maybe let's start with what could be the benefits of that.
J.P. Morgan would say, and several other people would say, look, they are a very strong institution. They have proven over the years to be well-managed. They've had minor mistakes. They've had high-profile mistakes, but the bank itself has not been damaged to the extent that we've seen, you know, maybe in like a Credit Suisse or even among the banks that just failed in the U.S., Silicon Valley or First Republic. Their heft and their diversity across all those businesses is what makes them strong. So when Silicon Valley or First Republic is failing, customers go to J.P. Morgan because they know J.P. Morgan is not going to fail. So I think the point we can look at is when Janet Yellen, the U.S. Treasury Secretary, needed to call someone in the banking world, she called Jamie Dimon, the CEO of J.P. Morgan. And part of that is he's Jamie Dimon. He's the kind of elder statesman of the U.S. banks. He's a longest-serving big bank CEO. But part of that is they're J.P. Morgan. They touch everything. He can corral the other big bank CEOs, and that's what wound up happening. He brought them all in, and they all had discussions. And they wound up depositing $30 billion in First Republic. That didn't save First Republic in the end, but it helped stabilize the system for a little bit. And when the system broadly needs help, Jamie Dimon is usually the one at the front of the line.
That anecdote about the Treasury Secretary being the one to call Jamie Dimon, is that where you begin to, in some people's eyes, worry that there's something wrong with the financial system, wrong with the size of J.P. Morgan when that call is an outbound one as opposed to one going the other way?
I mean, there are definitely voices, probably loudest Elizabeth Warren, that the banks have too much power and too much authority. The big banks are so big that there's no way the government would let them fail. Everyone knows the government would step in. And that's been the argument since 2008, right? The post-2008 financial crisis was supposed to lead to a bunch of regulatory changes to make sure banks were not too big to fail and the government would not have to step in. The popular opinion remains that the government would step in, but they wouldn't step in to save a smaller bank. So if someone is worried about their deposits that are uninsured at a smaller bank, they're going to pull them out. So the smaller banks are saying, we need to change the regulation. We need to change things.
Okay, so smaller banks aren't happy with the state of regulation. Is that because of the effect J.P. Morgan's size is having on them?
Yeah, it's sort of a category killer, right? We've seen this happen in the tech world where Amazon and Google have just sort of increasingly swallowed up new business lines and taken all the market share. We're far away from that. There are still 5,000 banks in the U.S. But it means it's harder sometimes for the smaller banks to compete. And I think there's the argument that regulation should figure out how to support the smaller banks that aren't doing risky things.
But David, when you are dealing with a bank of this size, does current regulation suffice? And what happens if, for instance, JP Morgan were to ever fail?
The thing to think about with JP Morgan and whether or not it were ever to fail is we actually still don't know the answer to this question. Post-2008, the Dodd-Frank financial laws were put in place. Globally, we've changed the banking rules. JP Morgan is certainly more capitalized and safer than it was in 2008. It didn't even run into problems in 2008. In the way the rules are structured, it theoretically should be able to fail in a safe and sound way. It has had to pour millions of dollars and millions of man hours into making plans for what would happen if it were to fail. I think most people think that that is a very remote case, and maybe they would still work. But again, we just saw three banks fail and need government assistance. So who really knows what happens in reality when something goes wrong?
And that was Wall Street Journal banking reporter David Benoit. David, a pleasure as always. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Luke.
In other news moving the world today, UK inflation has finally dropped below 10%, but slipped less than expected amid a sharp rise in food prices. That is according to the Office for National Statistics, which said today that consumer prices increased 8.7% in April compared with the same month a year earlier. At the same time, the closely watched core rate unexpectedly rose, indicating that the Bank of England may need to raise interest rates again to halt persistently high prices. U.S. companies are continuing to buy back their own shares, even as investors are becoming more cautious. Companies in the Russell 3000 have unveiled plans to buy back more than $600 billion in shares this year, in line with last year's record pace, according to research firm Barini Associates. A handful of the biggest companies are responsible for a disproportionate share of total buybacks. According to data from S&P Dow Jones Indices, Apple, Alphabet, Meta Platforms, and Microsoft were the biggest buyers of their own shares in the first quarter. In more JP Morgan news, the bank is alleging in new court filings that the U.S. Virgin Islands protected convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein at his private compound in exchange for cash and gifts. That filing is the latest twist in a legal fight that began last year when the territory sued JP Morgan, alleging that it failed to monitor Epstein as a client. The bank says the suits are misaimed as it couldn't have stopped Epstein. A spokeswoman for the U.S. Virgin Islands Attorney General described J.P. Morgan's claim as an attempt to shift focus away from the bank, which she said had, quote, a legal responsibility to report the evidence in its possession of Epstein's human trafficking and failed to do so. And a New York judge has set a March 25th, 2024 trial date for the hush money case involving former President Donald Trump. That date, which the judge said wouldn't be moved, will come as Trump is in the middle of the Republican primary campaign. After Tuesday's hearing, Trump claimed that restrictions imposed by state Supreme Court Justice Juan Merchan on how he can view and share evidence related to the case violated his First Amendment rights. Merchan said that Trump remained free to defend himself and speak publicly about the case. And finally, the United Kingdom is testing the saying that cash is king in a literal sense. Pushed out by the speed and convenience of using a card or phone to pay for things, cash now changes hands in only around 15% of transactions across the UK. And in parts of London, cash has become something akin to a prison currency, circulating primarily among panhandlers or those on the margins of society. However, WSJ reporter James Hookway says that a revolt is brewing in opposition to digital-only payments, one that combines fringe theories about world domination with more common-sense arguments in favor of paper money.
There's quite a large number of people who can accept the idea that cash remains an important piece of public infrastructure. older people are familiar with cash. In many countries, there are little raised braille dots on the banknotes so the visually impaired can figure out which banknotes they're handing over. Some people enjoy the anonymity that comes with cash. A lot of financial inclusion specialists argue that it's important to keep cash because not everybody necessarily has a bank account. If you think about vulnerable groups, immigrant groups, they don't necessarily get easy access to a bank account. It does indicate that there could be a lot of people who fall through the digital cracks, and the only safety net that they actually have is cash.
And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.